Hi everyone, welcome to STEP's audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEP's events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enerami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
Amjad, thank you for coming all the way from SF, from San Francisco here. It's great to have you with us.
It's my pleasure. Great to be here.
Let me start by asking you, what do I need to do to get Elon Musk to reply to as many tweets of mine as he does with you?
I think you have to take enough risk potentially ending your career on Twitter to entertain the world's richest man.
I've seen that. I'm going to come back to that later, but you've become one of the biggest founders in the Valley. In fact, Paul Graham, I think once he was asked, what is the most ambitious startup right now? And he said, Replit, your company. But you didn't just start there. You actually came from humble beginnings. You were born and raised in Jordan before you moved to Silicon Valley. So tell us about that journey, how it started and how you ended up there.
Yeah, so I think I was very lucky to get exposure to computers early on. My father is an engineer. He's a civil engineer, and he was a government engineer at the time, and he bought us a computer when I was 5 or 6 years old. And I was enamored by it at the time, and I learned to code just because I wanted to use the computer. And then, you know, early 90s, if you wanted to use a computer, you have to learn how to program it. So I think it really started there as the beginnings. You know, I started a company when I was a teenager. I was making software for internet cafes, which was very profitable at the time. In college, the idea for Replit started percolating in my mind, and it was because I didn't have a laptop, and it was very hard to start learning how to code. You had to download a lot of software. You had to configure the software. So I started thinking that maybe you should be able to code in the browser. And surprisingly, there wasn't many people doing that. And so I had a breakthrough, made an open source thing, and that basically got me the ticket to the States. And eventually, you know, through a lot of different different paths in the story. I worked at a startup, worked at Facebook. Eventually, Haya and I, my wife, decided to start Replit because the project was begging to be started. We were working on it on the side and had a lot of users, and it was taking so much time, nights and weekends. So it's almost forced itself into becoming a thing. So that's how we started Replit, but it wasn't easy. We still had to somewhat bootstrap the company initially. We couldn't get into Y Combinator or any accelerator. It was hard to raise any VC funding. But eventually, the product just sort of spoke for itself, and we commanded attention because we did a good job building great technology.
I heard Paul Graham said that he was actually, I don't know if he told it this way, he wanted to start what Replit is today back then.
Yes.
How was your YC experience? How was it, and how did your relationship with him help you, get Replit to where it is today?
Yeah, so Haya and I got rejected from YC 3-4 different times. We stopped actually counting. And at some point, we sort of gave up about getting into YC. But we were actually very popular on a forum run by YC called Hacker News. And they loved Replit because the technology was very, very interesting. And Paul Graham reads Hacker News every day. Till this day, if you want to get Paul Graham's attention, just do well on Hacker News. And he found Replit, and it was like, you know, I've been looking for this company essentially all his life. And so he had Sam Altman reach out to me. One morning, I woke up, and I got a Twitter DM from Sam Altman. Sam Altman, obviously now world famous, at the time he was running YC, and he's like, hey, I run YC, can we chat? I was like, dude, I know who you are. So he invited me, And he didn't invite me to YC office. And I thought it was strange at the time. Now I know why. He invited me to the OpenAI office. So this was 2017.
Hey.
And I went to the OpenAI office and it was totally random. And we sat and we chatted. And he's like, we're really interested in your company. Here, take a look. This is an email from Paul sending me an email saying we should totally talk to you. I was like, you guys refused funding us for 3-4 times. I don't know if we want to do YC. He's like, look, you just got to talk to Paul. And we started an email relationship for almost 3 months. And he would write me essays. He would write me books. I think I could collect his writings from my email and print it into a book. He had a lot of amazing insights, and we kind of really connected over the core problem of, you know, what it means to be a software developer. And so eventually, he and I decided that, yes, maybe we should do YC because Paul Graham is so brilliant and he can be in our corner. So we told Sam, okay, yes, we'll do YC one day before the start. And Sam sends me an email and says, hey, like the team here wants to make sure, you know, that the process is followed. You know, they didn't want WASTA, you know, they wanted it. So he sent me the application so we can fill up the application again. And in the application for YC, you have to record a video every time. And Haya and I have recorded this video like 3-4 times and we're sick of it. We're just done. And so I pasted a YouTube clip. And so the next day, I didn't think much of it. The next day we went to interview and they call us in. And Michael Siebel, at the time he was the CEO of the core program, the moment we got into the interview, his face was red. He's fuming. I was like, what's going on? He's like, why did you Rickroll us? So Rickroll is this video. If you're making fun of someone, you can paste this 70s music clip of someone very cheesy dancing in a very awkward way. You can actually go to our YC page right now, and if you play the clip, you'll still get the Rickroll clip. And I thought we screwed up our chances. But I kind of wanted to get back at them for not, you know, letting us in for these.
That
all
was
these
a good way to do it. Before going more into Replit and AI, I want to touch base a little bit on. I've been following you on Twitter for a long X now for a long time, and in light of what's going on in Gaza and what's happened, how's that been for you as an Arab founder in Silicon Valley and in the U.S.? How's that impacted you? And just being able to stand up and, you know, your career is on the line. And there's been a lot of people being canceled. And for you to just stick with your principles and really, you know, just say what you believe in.
Yeah.
What was going on in your mind as this was unfolding and happening?
It was just horror. I mean, it was, you know, we were going to sleep and waking up. Until last night, I mean, just seeing children blown up to pieces. I mean, what are you? How can you live with that? I mean, the minimum is to try to say something about it. So I didn't think much of it. I just followed my principles and honestly, that's like the least we can do. I mean, that's not brave. You know, what's brave is the people in Gaza, they're the brave ones. And I think, like, you know, we owe it to them to at least tell their story, to at least show to the world that they're people, they're humans, and that, you know, if you're, you know, a Western person who's been lecturing everyone in the world about human rights since I was born, you know, on the TV, you see Disney movies and all of that, they've been telling us a certain thing for a long time. And now suddenly there's an exception. Human rights except for Gaza children. And so when I see hypocrisy, I mean, of course I'm going to call it out. And by the way, a lot of people agree with me. A lot of people send me messages, a lot of very important people in Silicon Valley otherwise.
In private,
yes. There's fear, obviously. Why am I, why don't I mean, obviously I care about, my career and the company and everything like that. But ultimately, I think if you zoom out a little bit and think about yourself and your place in history, it doesn't matter what's happening this month or the next month or the next month. What matters is how history looks back at you and what have you done when this time was going on. And I still don't feel like I've done enough. Yeah,
that's a very good way to, but it does take a lot of courage. So thank you for that. I want to move on and talk a little bit more about Replit and your vision to empower a billion creators around the world. Tell us about that vision and how you plan to make it happen.
Yeah, so for the first time in the history of humanity, we have this machine that you can go in front of, and if you type keys in a certain order, you make $1 million. This has never been possible before, right? And those keys are typically coding. Of course, you can write an essay and things like that, become famous on Substack. That's a different path, but coding is the highest leverage activity you can have, intellectual activity you can have as a human. You could change worlds. You can invent a piece of technology that creates a $1 trillion market cap like Bitcoin, and nobody knows who the person is. With AI today, you can have an infinite number of coworkers working for you. You don't need that many people to actually build something quite amazing. And so there just isn't enough developers in the world today. I mean, the world is headed to a place where it's primarily a digital economy. And in this digital world, we're creating these digital products. Everything's automated. And for all of that to happen, you just need a lot more coders. And coding can come in a lot of different ways, including actually not typing a lot of code and doing a lot of prompting. Prompting is another way of programming today. And so a billion people creating software does not necessarily mean a billion people learning how to code. But, we see a future where a billion people can have command over software and can be very productive with very little education. Just, we have people who've done 100 days of code on Replit. It's a free resource, a free course you can do on Replit. And have started companies that are on their way to making $1 million in ARR in a matter of months. And so it's we're at a point where you're going to see a $1 billion company started by one person. And so it's hugely empowering. And I think it's going to be important that this power is decentralized and accessible to everyone in the world.
Are there any stories from your community of builders that you can share with us?
Yeah. There are stories of people making really life-changing money, and there are stories of people building startups. Let me start with the first one. There was a kid in Nepal who learned to code on Replit and started doing bounties. Bounties is our gig software platform where you can make some money doing software tasks on Replit for other people. And he started doing software for a startup in the Bay Area called Synthesis. And he did, 3-4 bounties for them. And they were so impressed with his skills, they didn't know he was a kid from Nepal, teenager from Nepal. So they offered him a job. And they offered him somewhat of a Bay Area salary, like $80,000, $90,000. And they got on a call with him, and he was crying. And they asked him why he was crying. So his father was in Korea all his life being a day laborer and has not spent any time with their family just so he can send money back. And now he can bring back his father because the amount of money his father makes is nothing compared to the amount of money this kid is going to make. So this kid's entire family and probably community's lives have changed. And everyone around him is going to look and see how this kid's been able to change their life, and they're going to want to do that as well. And then on the other hand, there's a guy in our community. His name is Steve Marco. He started a company called Hey Data that does automation for the iPhone. You could build AI shortcuts. And I think he's on his way to like $500,000 ARR last time I checked. And he doesn't know how to use GitHub. He was asking me, how do I make sure my code doesn't, if I change my code, I want to go back to a previous version, because he just doesn't know how to, like, we made the tool so simple. You can start a company that's making more money than most companies in the world simply by learning just the basic of programming.
That's incredible. I want to talk about, we have 5 minutes left. It's a bit of a broad question, but what do you think are the dangers versus the opportunity of AI in the world?
Well, I think there's a lot more opportunity than dangers. I don't think it presents any unique dangers. I think it accentuates existing dangers. And the dangers are basically towards the most vulnerable people in the world, typically kids and the elderly and things like that. For example, spam and scam and fraud, especially targeting the elderly, is going to get much, much worse. You're going to get these calls that, you know, people have already gotten calls where they hear the voice of their kid on the phone and they ask for a ransom, and you pay that ransom because you've used some voice cloning thing. And you know, cybersecurity is going to get, you know, a lot harder. But I'm not a big believer in the idea of, you know, some AI that's going to kill, that's going to kill everyone. Obviously, weapons will have AI as well. But it's just a continuation of everything that we had. It's just a lot of a bigger problem. So in terms of what governments could do, I think they can just shore up existing, you know, cyber regulations and protections for the most vulnerable people in the population.
Last week or 2 weeks ago, OpenAI launched their video creator, and there's a lot of, you know, people talking about how many startups were killed by every release that OpenAI comes up with. Do you see the space as being dominated by a handful of companies, or do you see it more decentralized as the industry matures?
No, I don't see it dominated by a handful of companies. I think even if OpenAI and a few companies are the main model providers, it's still a decentralizing force, because you're going to have a ton of companies building on top of those platforms. So even if the platform layer is not that competitive, say in the cloud, AWS and, you know, Azure and Google Cloud, it's kind of, there isn't a lot of competition there, but they create enormous opportunities. Like SaaS would not exist if it weren't for the cloud. And I think it's the same is true in AI.
What kind of advice do you give to startups and founders? You're here in the Middle East, and really appreciate you coming here, where you're from, and having this kind of transfer of knowledge to the founders and startups here. We're speaking a bit backstage about, you know, companies being born here and their models. What is the best advice you can give them, in the sense that how can they build businesses that can become globally impactful when they're picking their ideas and launching their startups?
Yeah, I think the you know, the default path in sort of picking startup ideas is to try to do some kind of spreadsheet exercise and looking around the world and seeing what's already working and deciding to potentially copy that, which is, you know, a fine way. A lot of people made a lot of money that way. But I think a better way of doing things is following your passions. Typically, you know, people get excited about something. Maybe you studied a certain thing in college. Maybe you've read about a certain thing. Just follow that curiosity. And don't feel like you have to start a company right away. I think you can start a project. I think you can spend some time working on an open source thing. And so if you follow your curiosity, eventually you're going to end up with something unique, because every journey, every person has a different sort of unique set of skills and aspirations. And that way you're going to have less competition when you actually start the company. And the other thing is, like, don't quit so soon. You know, if it doesn't work the first month or two or year or two or three, honestly, you know, just keep adjusting and keep going. Obviously, you have to live. But sometimes it doesn't have to, again, it doesn't have to be a startup. Start as a start project, side project. You have your day job. You have your weekends. You have your nights. I mean, you can put in another 40 hours, especially if you're in 20s. You can have two working days. you can, you know, come home at 5 and start working on this.
Yeah, and like you said, just, you know, do it because you enjoy it and have fun with it. And it's a problem that you're curious about solving versus just trying to build a company. We have about a minute left. What is your outlook for the next 10 years when it comes to AI in the world in general, in the US and the rest of the world, based on everything that's going on right now?
Well, I think it's easy to look at what's happening in AI right now and assume the story's already been written. But like, you know, the iPhone came out in 2007. In 2008 or 9, the most popular apps in the App Store were like joke apps, were like the drinking beer app or the fart app or something like that, you know? So we're in that period of AI. It's so early and the story's not been written yet. And so I think the world is going to look radically different. When I gave a TED talk about how software will change over the next few years, and I tried to sketch out what it will actually look like. And it was a very hard exercise because I think there's so much potential for a lot of professional jobs and work to change. So I think that the thing the name of the game over the next 10 years is change, is rapid change. It's unexpected change. And the way to prepare for it is to be very dynamic and not to have long-term, have some idea where you're headed, but be very flexible and very agile in how you react to it.
Amjad, I wish we had more time. Thank you very much for coming here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.